Hello, soccer fans. This is Robert Hay coming at you from Shot Happens Again, your podcast where we talk about youth soccer and the stresses, the joys, and everything else that comes with it. Once again, my co-host Reed Maltby is here. Coach, how's everything going?
Oh, it's going very well. Busy. You know, we're starting to kick up. Summer's always a little bit slower, and we're starting to kick up here with activity, but excited to spend some time with you and with our audience.
So episode three we started off our show talking about tryouts. We then went into a serious topic about concussions and player safety. And so we thought we'd talk in episode three here about another important topic, but something that might hit a little bit closer to home to our listeners, which is parent volunteers and how parents can get involved in their child's setup. So I will start this topic by saying, of the two of us on this podcast, one of us is not a trained soccer coach in any way, shape, or form. Although I guess, well, not a very well-trained coach. How about that? And I think everybody can guess which one of us that is.
That's me. That's me.
Well, you really need to work on that F license. It's just it's hanging out there. You need to just check that off the list. But you know, it's a transition. I mean, I think for maybe it's my experience is unique. I don't think it is. You know, you start off with your kid and you play rec or you play casual soccer and you're teaching your kids the basics. You know, you're taking them to games, you're watching them on TV, you're taking them out to the field and kicking the ball around with them. And all of a sudden you're handing your kid off to a coach. You know, they get picked for a travel team and you know, now they have a professional. They don't need to rely on you to teach them the game every day. Now, of course, you know, you're still a teacher, but it's a different kind of experience and a different kind of relationship. So for a parent volunteer, Coach, why don't you give us an overview in your history and your past? What's the best kind of parent volunteer for a travel soccer team?
The best kind of parent volunteer is the ones that are just that say, I'll do whatever it takes, and I you know, have that enthusiasm to want to be there. And here's the thing, though. It's usually that relationship, it has to be set by the coach or the club. So the problem is the best parent volunteer is the one that we engage from the very beginning, and we set the expectations, and we draw them in. So that's the cop-out answer. But
So draw them in. So you're recruiting parents from the get-go. Like, you're specifically going out and identifying parents in advance, and you're like, this person is someone who's going to be a key volunteer for us in the year ahead.
Yes, in a way. So I was always taught, I had a really great mentor who taught me to have a team meeting. That was one of the most important things at the beginning of the year, was to set tone. And of course, one of the things he used to have me say was that I would explain to them that, you know, what are you, a lawyer, an architect, an engineer? I don't come to your job and tell you how to do your job because I don't know anything about it. So all that I ask is that you respect that I know how to do my job and allow me that grace to do my job. Even if you have questions and you're not quite sure, don't come into my office and tell me how to do my job, but we can have a conversation. And even at a young age, I'd have that conversation with parents and they would laugh because here I'm 18, 19 years old and I'm talking to people twice my age and I'm telling them, hey, I'm the professional here. You hired me. Trust me, because you're the one that was willing to hire me to do it. But the other thing that he always talked about and that I've always inserted into my meetings is from day one, I set the tone with the parents. Here's our rules of interaction. Our rules of engagement. Here's how we will communicate with each other. Here are the best ways for me to communicate with you, and here are the best, and I want to know the best ways for you to, you know, be able to communicate with me. And by the way, we are doing this together. It's our journey together because one, these are your kids, so I get that, and you have their best interest at heart. And two, I need your help because you know your kids well. So we're going to do this together. It's not shove you out of the way, be your kids and get out. And I always use the analogy, have you ever seen a classroom where the teacher locks the door and closes the blinds and says, no parents allowed? No. They allow the parents in. They bring them in during conferences. They send home homework. They ask the parents to engage. They ask for room dads and room moms because they want you there in the process because they know you're partners in the education. And that's how I looked at it. I always did with the parents. And so it wasn't a matter of identifying skills and saying, oh, you will do this. I would just say to the parents, these are the roles I have. I'd love for people to step into those roles. And I usually already had a parent or two that I had identified well before we had that meeting at tryouts or something. There was a parent that stuck out to me that I said, you know what, you've been taking pictures the whole time, would you be willing to be my team photographer? Now what I've done is I've tapped into something they really like, in addition to their child, something they like to do. I've given them, I've empowered them to be a part of the process. I've encouraged them to utilize whatever skill it is so that they feel like they're adding value to the team. And I've made them busy. In other words, I've given them a task, and people with a task spend a lot less time standing on the sidelines, questioning what's happening on the field or what's happening on the other sideline. They do their task and they enjoy their child and they feel like they're part of something. What parents hate is being shoved away and said, get out of here. We don't want anything to do with you. You're a cancer. And what they hate is what happens is they're standing on that other sidelines and that cancer is just growing because they're not involved at all. They feel like they're just watching, through a window at you,
Yeah. I come from a family of teachers, and it's interesting because I won't say specifically who I'm thinking of, but there are certain teachers I know that engaging parents is the last thing that they want to do. So it's interesting to hear you say, it's the idea of engaging parents. I guess it's more of, in some ways, to head off a problem at the beginning, but also to set your structure so it takes pressure off of you and work off of you from the beginning. To be purely to be honest, I mean, it's helpful to set the structure up in advance for you so you can focus more on what you do best, which is the coaching and the managing of the players.
Yeah, it's totally selfish. I mean, to be honest, in the beginning, a lot of times honesty's it is selfish. Good. It's like, I'm not comparing them in this way, apples and oranges, but, they always say, like, a tired child is a well-behaved child, a tired dog is like, we take our dog for a walk early in the morning so that she doesn't spend the rest of the day just wreaking havoc, right? Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing. If engaged parents are parents who are, they feel like they're part of it and they want to help make it a better environment because you've engaged them rather than standing over there, thinking of ways, quote-unquote, to sabotage. And so, selfishly, it was like, if I can engage my parents and give them tasks, then they won't be on my quote-unquote back, right?
Mm-hmm.
As time went by, I realized what a value parents actually add to it. I had a team photographer, and at the end of every season, we had these big Shutterfly books that she would create for all of us of all of our memories, and everybody looked forward to them. She'd take hundreds of pictures a game. And I had, a team administrator who was just great at running taking care of logistics for tournaments. And I had a social person that she absolutely loved organizing the dinners and things like that. And I had dads who were my, who were my helpers at practice. And it was things like they weren't doing anything but helping pick up cones or shag balls. And they were happy to do that, because it's like, hey, man, I'm involved and I get to be a part of my kid's journey. So, in the end, it went from being selfish to being like, hey, these people added real value to the process. And the best thing is they became family to me.
Mm-hmm.
They were as close to me as the kids were. And that was the best part of it.
Yeah, that's what you keep hearing when you go to these training sessions and these information sessions and things like that. It's like, this is going to become your family. This is a very close relationship you're going to have with these other parents and your kid's going to have with his or her teammates. They're going to go through the soccer life together in a lot of ways, and you're going to make some of your closest friends in here. So you keep hearing that when you talk about this journey, not you specifically, but you second person plural when you go through travel systems.
Yes.
So let's talk about the alternative. What happens now? I've spent a lot of time in the nonprofit world, and nonprofit organizations rely on volunteers. And we all know there are times that happen when there's no volunteers. I mean, people are just happy to be there. You might have a case where you have parents that they're happy their kids have made this level and they're turning them over to the pros and saying, coach my kid. I'm here to watch. I wrote a check and, that's what I want to do. Or conversely, you live in an area with a lot of jobs where there isn't a lot of free time. So you have carpools where you have, a lot of the kids coming in one car because the parents just don't have the time to commit, whether that's because they're traveling or because their job is a 12-hour-a-day shift. So what happens in that case where you have a team or you're a club administrator and you have teams where there just isn't parent volunteers? How do you get around that? Are you able to still do that identification system, or do you have to coerce parents in a different way?
I was, and a lot of people actually believe that this is wrong, that the coach should take care of a lot of the administrative stuff because that's the one paid person. But I found out very early on that team administrator was absolute gold because they also became sort of your liaison to the parents. They became your ally. When the parents, when conversations were being had, when you weren't there, if they were going south, that administrator was the one that would say, now, let's rational heads here. Let's just give him time, or you know, hey, maybe he meant this, or they basically, they protect you and they defend you. And they also became the one that were, you know, describing to the parents what was going on. Well, I just talked to coach the other day, and this is really what's happened, and this is what coach is trying to accomplish. So let's give it a little bit of time. So that person was gold, because they took a lot of weight off of our shoulders as coaches, because when you do the licensing work and when you do the training, which is a whole nother podcast, we could actually do 10 podcasts, on my opinion, over the training of coaches and stuff. But
we're getting
one
there.
One of the things that you're not trained on is balancing the checkbook and collecting the fees and booking the hotel rooms and all of those other things. And how are you collecting fees when you're over in a training session or you're on the other sideline coaching the game? That's when the administrator can walk around going, hey, so-and-so, you still owe $20, you know, that type of stuff. So that person became vital. So no matter what, hands down, I at least had to identify an administrator. And I was at a club where we were very good at, I would be, you know, hey, Reed, we're going to slide you over to the U12 girls group. And by the way, so-and-so has always been a parent volunteer. I would tap her almost immediately. So we were really good at communicating with each other who we should be tapping, because these volunteers had already shaken out of the woodwork. If you don't have them, that's fine. You don't need them. Like I said, and you made the comment, as a teacher, when I was a teacher, I wasn't excited about engaging the parents. I actually loved my parents, but you know, I wanted to work with the kids, so I wasn't excited about having parent meetings and having, you know, 15 people in my room on party days and stuff, because it the kids get a routine, and when they're 5 years old, that really throws a monkey wrench in there. But I felt like it was necessary to set the relationship. The same thing. It's not that I always wanted to engage the parents in that way. I just knew that was the best way to set a relationship for us. But if they didn't come out of the woodwork, I was perfectly fine. I knew I could, as long as I had an administrator, we could do this thing, you know? And honestly, I really enjoyed the parents who were that busy yet still wanted to do things for their kids, because they were the ones that would check in with me and be like, hey, I'm not around. How's Johnny doing? How's this? How's that? And like, they actually cared, and I was able to send them pictures or videos and talk to them, and they, you know, they really got it. Plus, I do it now. I drop my kids off at Muay Thai, and I want nothing to do with being that hovering parent, just because I love those parents who went off and sat in the corner, or who sat in their car and read a book, or who carpooled and everything, because I knew they trusted me that much to do my job.
Yeah, I can see that is that perspective as well. You know, just as a parent myself, you can see the relief I think sometimes coaches have when they look at the sideline and they see the parents just relaxing and you know, doing work or doing something else. So there's a couple of different models out there, and I think it sounds like it works for all different types of parents. So in my situation, I'm the team administrator for my daughter's team. We call them team manager. And I'm the one who has to shake down parents for information and to submit the rosters and things like that. So it's been an eye-opening experience, and it's good to know that there's a community of people out there like myself, both in the club and outside of the club, that are going through this. Because I think if this is the first time that you do a volunteer role with a travel or academy club, it's pretty intimidating, I think, especially if it's framed in the wrong way. I mean, you know, it's one thing to sit there and say, okay, you're in charge of making sure, you know, that there's a carpool sign up. That's fine. It's, you know, that's fairly easy to do. But, you know, on the other hand, you're also in charge of making sure the roster's up to date and your player cards are completed before every match, and you know, the officials and the equipment's there and everything like that. I mean, depending on your club, it's a pretty big responsibility. And like you said, on one hand, it's good because you trust, you know, you give the coach the ability to do what the coach does best, which is the coaching. But on the other hand, it's, you know, it almost necessitates a pyramid of volunteers to help support that. And that can be an intimidating thing, I think, for some parents. On the rec side, I've been involved, you know, in rec soccer, and it's hard to get volunteers for the reasons you've outlined. It's just either time or lack of faith in their ability to do it, or just, you know, a number of reasons. But it seems like the pressure is even more on the academy side, just because the roles are more important. You're not going to forfeit a game if your roster isn't correct in rec, or if you bring in a player and you don't fill out the paperwork in advance, or, you know, if your bench, the person who's in charge of your bench, doesn't show up with the bench. So it seems like there's a lot more pressure, and it would almost be it seems like it would be better to have, for these clubs, to have some sort of advanced training in place where I know they don't have a lot of time, but really a volunteer training system that a lot of nonprofits have. You know, you have large nonprofits train their volunteers on how to be good volunteers. It seems like this would be a model that a lot of clubs should adopt and think about doing.
I completely agree. The last club I was at, Star Soccer Club in Cincinnati, we actually did that. We had a binder, a master binder for all of our volunteers and our registrar, our club registrar, who helped all these volunteers get these player cards and get the rosters stamped and all those other things. She created this binder and made a training program. And anytime a new – and my wife was one of the people that helped her create that binder because my wife was a genius at this. And that's the advice I'd give you. Have a binder with copies of everything, a copy of the birth certificates, a copy of all the player cards. So everything's right there in case something's missing. You've got at least some kind of paper trail with all the logistics, tournaments, maps, extra maps, all kinds of stuff. So if anybody asks you a question, it's always all right there with you. And then give a copy of that binder to the coach. I always had a binder on me, and that was something that my wife would do, and that was kept it very organized. But so the club worked together to have this. So you're identified, Robert. You're now have a new, you're either new to the club or you've never done parent and admin. At the beginning of the year, when I do my parent meetings, I usually have a coach's clinic. And when coach's clinic's happening, or we'll run a camp and all the kids are at the camp, when the preseason camp is happening, the registrar is training these volunteer parents on, here's everything, here's the binder. It's getting even easier. There are programs out there like Walk Me, which is a video walkthrough program for onboarding new employees at companies, and you can do YouTube videos and things like, and you have a Dropbox. That's the other thing, is you can create a Dropbox with all the master documents that these parents need. You give them access to that file, that folder, and in that folder are videos explaining how they do everything, and it just walks them right through, especially if it's screen captures of, here's the process for registering your team for the league. You go to this site, you click this button, and it's just walking them right through. It's so much easier than it was back in the day when it was word of mouth, or they just handed you a team and said, hey, Robert, good luck. the coach doesn't know what he or she's doing because he or she's never had to administrate a team. So I would just ask around.
Yeah. Start cold calling people as quickly as possible. Well, you know, I think we've benefited. You know, I work for a good club. You've worked and run really good clubs. So let's take it from the parent perspective. You know, if you're a parent who wants to volunteer now, as we talked about in our first episode, you're supposed to do your research. You research the clubs that your child is trying out for or could be accepted to. But, you know, let's say there was no red flags. You go through the tryouts, child's accepted, and now you're ready to volunteer. You want to be an administrator. You want to be a social coordinator. You want to do help. But there's no you get kind of the cold shoulder from the club. Like they're focused on, you know, what you keep hearing is, yes, we'll onboard you. We'll get you ready. We'll sign you up, and maybe they do sign you up, but you don't get any communication from them or feedback from them. What do you do in that case? I mean, do you force the issue? What do you do if you're the parent who wants to be involved, but it's the club that's holding you up?
Well, that's interesting because my wife, she sent me a note saying that the other thing that I missed was that when she became a parent team admin, she was mentored by a registrar, and then that was what she started doing, is every time somebody new became an admin, and she would mentor. And so that happened at our club too, is there were mentors in place, so prior admins or ones who'd been doing it for a while, they'd be paired up with somebody who said, I'm completely new, walk me through this, and Amy would walk them through it. So if you've got a club that's not doing that kind of stuff, that's your best bet, is to start reaching out, because your club, most clubs have at least some kind of list of names, or they have a list of teams. Or you go and you stand at practice and you go over to the other team in the age group, or you go to any of the other teams and you just say, where's the parent admin? And you find a mentor. I know that sounds horrible, you know, that you have to do that legwork, but find a mentor, because these waters are hard to navigate. And here's the problem. And I hope you don't experience this, Robert. It sounds like you're at a great club. Mm-hmm. But for others, you make a mistake and everybody turns and looks at you. If you're in a big, you're in the state cup and you didn't properly do player cards and your team is disqualified in game two, everybody turns and looks at the parent. They don't blame the coach. They'll blame the parent admin. That's a ball you dropped. And it's horrible because you're just trying to help your kid. You know? So find a mentor who can walk you through this and help you navigate these waters. And if your club doesn't have this kind of thing in place, volunteer immediately to be on the board to push something like that to be in place. Because you really do need to take care of your volunteers at your clubs, especially the smaller clubs that are run primarily by volunteers. And my board president Dave Crow used to always say, have you volunteered yet? Because we needed people who said, I've got a skill set. I'm great. I'm OCD and I'm really good at organizing things. And I'm going to create a manual for all of your parents. Well, then you're on the board and this is what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. A mentorship program is a good idea. So what other roles? So we've talked about, you know, team admin, which is the person who kind of handles the paperwork. And as you put it, liaises between the coach and the parents. Team photographer is a great idea. Actually, I'm stealing that one. I hadn't thought about that one for my team. There are so many photographers in my area that I'm sure one of my parents is a good one. Social coordinator. Let's talk about social coordinator. So what would a good social coordinator on a club do?
So this one was one we made up. I mean, it just kind of grew organically, and then we actually started identifying and naming it. But it's that person that just says, hey, when we go to away tournaments, I'll organize the meals. So we're all going to go eat at Denny's at between games 1 and 2, and I'll organize the after parties. And we used to do study tables with the kids, and so they'd be back at the hotel, and we'd go. And that was the person who worked with the hotel to secure us a space where all the kids could go in and order pizzas to come in, and the kids would sit and eat pizzas. And, you know, the postseason party, that was the person who was organized. So that social coordinator is the one that's gelling the family. Here's the thing. I made the comment about family, and then you brought that up too, because it said a lot. Raise your hand out there in podcast world if there's just one family member that every once in a while, like, I really don't want to go to this year's holiday party because I just don't want to. I mean, we have it, right? Even our own family, sometimes we get on each other's nerves. You're spending, and that's once a year that crazy Uncle Reed is there, and you're like, oh, I got to talk to crazy Uncle Reed about soccer again. This is, you know, once a year for you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
At Thanksgiving, but for you parents, it's a couple nights a week. You know, you see them at practice, and then it's on the weekends, and then when you got a tournament, 3 or 4, you're seeing them way more than you do your own family. You're not always going to get along. So the thing is a social coordinator helps create opportunities for you all to engage on neutral ground. And it helps you to create relationships where you can at least see each other as families. And I know there was a post out months ago that said you shouldn't socialize with the other parents on a team. And I vehemently disagree with that. Your family and you're spending time together. More importantly, your kids are becoming best friends. And the worst thing you can have is two parents who hate each other's guts. And those are the two kids who are best buddies and want to be together outside of practice and want to stay on the same team for the rest of their lives. And now you're stuck with this other person you don't get along with. So that social coordinator sort of helps grease the wheels of all of that and just tries to get everybody to see, you know, the bigger picture. We don't have to always get along, but we do have to spend time together. We might as well make it quality, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. Not yours, the article's perspective, because I can understand, you know, pushing back on the idea that these parents will be my best friends forever. I mean, but the fact is you do spend a lot of time with them. And, you know, for those of us who aren't in the soccer world as our day jobs, we go to an office or we go to a workplace and we spend 40 hours a week with people. And they may not be our best friends, but we have to get along with them. And we want to get along with them to the point where we, you know, can tolerate each other. When you're on the soccer field with watching your kids play, I mean, that's fun. I can't imagine wanting to ruin it by, you know, disagreeing, you know, not getting along with other parents. Now, I know not everybody's personality melds and meshes, but I mean, you know, I don't see not trying to at least get along socially to keep this experience pleasant. That's just foreign to me. That must be an interesting article. I'm going to have to look that one up, but,
I've got it somewhere else. It is the 10 things that sports parents should stop doing right now. And I responded to it with the 10 things sports parents should keep doing. because I disagreed with some of the points in there. And, you know, it's perspective. But yeah, there were a lot of parents who weighed in. And that was a lot of conversation was around that one point where it's like you shouldn't socialize with the other parents. And people are like, why? They're my best friends. I mean, you know, we've got a group of friends here in San Diego. They're all – our kids don't play baseball. But when we go and hang out with them, most of those people are together because their kids all play Little League together. And they're going to pool parties and they're having barbecues and they're going to fireworks together outside of the sport itself because they've become friends. And it's like you're missing out on opportunities here because I'm going to say it again. It is not about the trophies. It's about the memories. And 20 years from now, your kids are going to remember the fun times you had. I still to this day have parents reach out to me and say, you remember that time we were in Columbus and it was like 23 degrees and raining and in the middle of April and freak snowstorm, and then we went back to the hotel when the games were canceled and we sat in the lobby until 2 in the morning and just talked and they, you know, it's like, that's the memories. And those kids have that memories. Those kids, mm-hmm. the kids see more than we think. They know when parents don't get along and stuff. And so, I mean, if you're going to spend that much time with people, one, for the sake of your kids, you know, your kids are forging relationships. You should at least get along. It's like, you know, when my kids are dating somebody, I at least want to know the parents and, you know, it's like your in-laws. You want to at least get along, right? Because they're going to spend, the kids are going to spend time together. And so that's one. Two, because it's about having fun. And if you're not having fun, your kids pick up on that. And what the heck are you doing on the sidelines if you're bickering with your fellow parents while your kid's playing? I think we kind of lost the message here. And three, they're family. Let's be honest, they're family. If you do it right, and if a coach and parents can set the right relationships, these are people that you will know for the rest of your life. I still to this day get texts and phone calls and emails from parents whose kids I haven't coached in 15 years. Heck, a mom reached out to me the other day. Her kid was in my kindergarten class, and that was years ago. But she just reached out and said, hey, I saw you on Facebook. How are things going? You know, the kids say hi. Joe says hi. You know, they're family.
Yeah. It's just a foreign idea. I don't know. I don't get it. So let's talk about, though, you mentioned bad behavior. Let's talk about game day for a minute. In the league that we play in, there's a very, very aggressive emphasis on sportsmanship. It is very aggressive. And I suspect it has something to do with the fact that, you know, the stereotype out there about soccer parents and sports parents in general in this country and how insufferable they can be. So obviously your coach, you want them focused on the field, the tactics, the players and everything like that. You know, as a parent volunteer, what role should your parents be playing in policing the sidelines? I mean, it seems obvious that they should, talk up the fellow parents and, you know, make sure everything and keep an ear and eye out for everything. But really, how much of the responsibility for making sure that everybody behaves themselves falls on a parent volunteer?
I don't think it falls on a single parent volunteer. I think it has to fall on the entire community. Because what we need to understand is when everybody talks about culture, they talk about either the players or the players and the coaches, or they talk about the club, like the paid coaches and the board. No, a culture is a living, breathing organism that is affected by the stimuli in its environment, just like anything else. And so anybody that has a touch point with a culture has an opportunity to either spark greatness in that culture or spoil and rot that culture. And that means referees have an impact on culture, board members and club members and other coaches and parents. So you may think the culture is being built between the players and the coach, but the parents are always there on the sidelines, and they're the ones driving them to and from practice, and they're the ones that are talking to them at the dinner table. So the parents play as much a role in the culture. So the best thing that parents can do is, one, be part of that culture. Know the values. Know what matters, and that it's a values-led, purpose-driven culture. And included in that process so that when they're on those sidelines, they know what the values are and they're upholding them. So then it doesn't fall on one person. But having said that, if you've got everybody understanding that they actually impact the culture, and so they take responsibility for who we are as a club, the badge we wear, everybody wears it. You do have those single volunteers who maybe are guardians of the culture. These are the people who are helping the parents, you know, on game day email. I was always sending out to my parents, this is what we worked on this past week. This is what you can look for in the games. If you feel the need to yell something, here's a great thing that you could probably call out, because that's what we worked on, and it'll reinforce what I'll be saying on my sideline once in a while to the kids. And oh, by the way, our value word for the week was respect. So encourage and get excited when your kid does something respectful as well. Or maybe it's sportsmanship and knocks another kid down and your kid picks them up. Make sure you give your kid an attaboy or attagirl for showing sportsmanship, because in the long run, that's really one of the things we have to do, is teaching those values. And then you have this culture guardians who are helping saying, hey, the word of the day is respect. The other one you can do, because you are going to have it no matter what, is a lollipop parent. That's always one of my favorite ones. And I think you know what that is, right?
It's the person who gives out lollipops at halftime?
It's the person who gives the lollipops to the parents who are yelling. They walk up to them and they hand them a lollipop without saying a word, and enough is sent in the message that, hey, you may be yelling, things are inappropriate. At first, people hate it, but... I actually had parents who stepped up on their own and said, we've got a quote unquote swear jar. And it's anytime a parent yelled at the ref, they had to put a dollar in the jar.
Oh goodness.
So you start to have those volunteers that help for that. But to be honest with you, going back to what you said, I don't think it should fall on a single volunteer for many reasons, like I just said, but also because that person becomes the villain, the bad guy, right? Mm-hmm. They become that. They're the one. You know, it's like my wife and I talk about when it's working with the kids. No, you don't want to be the bad guy. You don't want to be the one that has to always be the heavy and come down on. And you start seeing that parent as the heavy, and it breaks down, erodes those relationships that you're trying to build. And so it really is, the onus is on everybody. If you do have a very level-headed parent, I've had them before. I've had the dads who were a little bit too rambunctious, and then the mom would come to me, the wife would come to me and say, what do I do? You know, I want to make bet them. And so they would start betting and like, hey, Robert, I bet you dinner in a movie that you can't go this entire game without saying a word. And I come over at the end of the game, and, you know, you'd be like, I owe my wife dinner in a movie game because I ate my dang mouth. And then so you do have, there's opportunities there where the parents can sort of help police each other.
Yeah. So if as time goes along, though, and these teams stay together, that becomes easier and easier. But what about for teams that are first coming together, or, you know, maybe new parents are being integrated? Is there any, you think, social activities, or what should these groups do, these groups of parents do to, in order to start getting along, especially if they're new groups of parents?
So we had a brand new group of parents with my one son's team, and we came from everywhere. It was a brand new team. And we had this guy, he was actually the coach. I assisted him. We took over the team after a couple months from a paid coach. It wasn't working out, but the parents still didn't, because of it, there was no relationship at all. Mm-hmm. And he steps in and says, I got this. And I said, I'll assist you. And he was a former English player. Mark, he'd come over and he played in the academy systems over there and everything like that. So he was a very driven guy, and he knew it. So to have fun on Saturdays, we hold these Saturday morning practices, and if he started to get too serious, he'd call the dads and say, come on, it's kids versus, or whoever was there, because it was moms, mm-hmm. too. It's kids versus parents. And that became a tradition. We would play kids versus parents on Saturdays. And then there were other opportunities. You know, we would do practices where the parents would come out and they'd join in the practice and things like that. And that was building that social, like you said, that was building those social relationships. That group of parents, they still talk to each other. I watch them on Facebook. Their kids have scattered to the wind, and they're not all on the same team anymore. And yet somebody will say, William scored a goal today. And four of the parents from that old team from way back in the day will be like, congratulations, so glad to see he's doing so well. You know, it's just, they're still friends because there was opportunities to socialize. So look for those chances. And that's what a social coordinator can do. There are opportunities to get the parents out without the kids. We would go to tournaments and we would have the 18-year-olds, you know, the two or three 18-year-old brothers or sisters, and we'd be like, all right, here's the deal. We're putting all the kids in two rooms with pizza and movies, and you all are the babysitters, and, you know, quote unquote, and we're going to go have a dinner, or we're going to go down and sit around the pool and socialize and get to know each other. And it made a big difference, because the thing is, it always happens. We get so focused on our own kids. We get so focused on whatever it is. We get caught up in outcomes and everything like that, that we stop seeing other people as human beings. It's like when we drive on the road and I yell at another driver, I don't see the driver. I see the red car that just cut me off, right?
True.
As parents, we stop seeing other people. We don't see the parents. We see Mikey's parents or Joey's parents. We don't see them as human beings. When they socialize, they get to know them and they understand them and they see them as living, breathing people, and they have empathy for who they are as a person. And they get to know them as a person in a way that they know. Like, I've coached teams before that had a really rigid military guy. His kid was on the team, and everybody got to know him and realized that was him. You know, he was just a great guy, a great sense of humor, but he always stood very straight and seemed very stoic and always looked like he was in a bad mood. And he wasn't. And so everybody got to know that. And says, oh, always standing there thinking, oh, Joe's dad's a real jerk. People got to know that was just him, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I when you were speaking, something really struck with me, and that's the idea of knowing a parent as, you know, Joey's dad or, you know, Jane's mom or something like that. I mean, it's moving from that relationship of this is someone's parent to this is another person who's helping move this team along. And I think that's a really good point. I want to emphasize that to the listeners, because I know that really sticks with me. As a team administrator, I now need to go out and get a really good social coordinator. I'm going to have to go, like, beg, borrow, and steal to find some socialite to handle this, it sounds like, to keep my team functioning this year.
You know, you go putt-putting, you go do an escape room, you go do whatever, and take the kids along, you go for ice cream, and the kids, because the kids, I'm telling you right now, they'll ditch you. The moment you go do something with the kids where they can get away from you parents, they've already built their relationships. They're going to ditch you. And then you've got, you know, 20 sets of parents sitting around staring at you. They go, so you're Joey's dad. I'm Mike's dad. Good to meet you. And then you just stand there for 10 minutes. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're going to ditch you. You're going to have to figure out how to be social. So if you have somebody that can set things up where you guys naturally the socializing comes out and playing games and stuff. The other one is we would do trivia nights. We would, at our banquets and parties at the beginning of the year and the end of the year, we had the one mom would always organize these big trivia games and everybody would join in and they'd be things about the team like, mm-hmm. whose dad always says blah at halftime? Whose dad is the one that sits in the corner and listens to headphones during every game? And then everybody would laugh and then somebody would go, yeah, tell me, why do you sit over in the corner? And he'd say, you know, because I just want to watch them play and I don't want to deal with all the other noise that happens and I'm an introvert. So, and then you're like, you get to know him and you're like, oh, that's why he sits over there.
Interesting.
My wife also mentioned you were talking about being a team admin and you'll feel this, Robert, and anybody else that's a team admin. It is unfortunately a thankless job. And and that comes from the coach first. I can't count the number of times I never turned to my administrator and said, thank you for all you do and should have. And I, to anybody that was ever an administrator on my team, please know this is why I'm advocating this because I truly appreciated what you did, even if I didn't say it. You will be the first to blame when something goes wrong because you're the administrator. But here's the hard part. You will nobody will say a word when things go right because they expect it. So just get used to having that thick skin of everything goes smoothly at that away tournament and nobody says, attaboy, Robert, because they just expect it. And they also, it's like my wife always talks about the sock fairy or the shoe fairy, you know, who cleans up after the kids when they drop their socks and shoes all over the house. And then the kids just think, oh, they miraculously cleaned themselves up. We'll think that as parents and coaches, like, oh, what do you know? My roster miraculously appeared for me for this tournament. There was somebody that actually did that for you, Reed. So just get used to not being thanked a lot.
That's fine. You know what? I get a team t-shirt and that's the important thing. So I get some of that club swag that would cost me, you know, an obscene amount of money on the website. So I'll take there that as go. A small thank you. So
and you will have those awkward conversations. It was one of the reasons why clubs I was at, they didn't have us coaches collect the money is because as a coach, it's really hard to say to a parent, hey, your in arrears $350 for your kid. And the club is, you know, the club and league are like, you know, because they will threaten not to issue the player card as the coach. That's a really tough conversation to have because it creates an awkward relationship and it creates that, is my kid going to be public punished by a coach because I haven't paid my fees? And so having a volunteer, a fellow parent do it allows for some secrecy and privacy. If they're very good. My wife is always very good if somebody was behind because we would get behind, you know?
Yeah.
And she was always very good at making it private so nobody else knew. It was nobody else's business who had paid and who hadn't.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it also took the pressure off of, and it has to be this way. It made it so that the coach didn't have to have that conversation. As a DOC, I would actually be the one who would call up parents sometimes because I didn't want my coaches to have any kind of sourness in their relationships with their parents.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. I mean, it to have that person positioned as the person who sucks up all the negative energy so the coach can just focus on the positive coaching aspects with the parents, that's a good point. It makes me really regret. No, I'm just kidding.
You'll love it most because what'll happen is, and it's getting better and better as I started to see more and more as my career went on, more and more parent volunteers did get recognized and did get. I just saw one of my former parent volunteers got this really great gift at the end of season party and posted it on Facebook. And I was like, all right, you know, finally getting a little credit for what you've done.
Well, you know, it's both easier and harder now to work with parents, I think, as an administrator. Again, this is a new thing, you know, being new to this, this may sound like a bold thing to say, but, you know, in this world of interconnectivity, cell phones, mobile phones, apps, I mean, we have a team app that's really, really good and allows me to reach out to parents at all times in five or six different ways. I can do basically a chat with them. I can do email. I can do a message board. I can do like all different kinds of outreach. But at the same time, you know, it makes it hard to figure out like what's the fine line between spamming parents and getting them involved. So it's also tough to try and find that is to organize your fellow parents because on one hand, as a parent, I don't want to hear from the team every day. But on the other hand, you know, I want to make sure that the message is getting out. So in this modern era of interconnectivity, it's both easier and harder, it seems like, to organize parents in a productive way.
Yes, and coaches, this is on you. You can help your parent admins by, at the beginning of the year, setting that tone. You know, you'll always get an email on Sunday. If there's inclement weather, we will contact you via X at, you know, this many times. And then things will pop up, but expect. And so if parents are expecting that, they're going to hear from the team admin at least three times a week and the coach once or twice a week. And then, of course, there'll be the inclement weather or emergencies or change in plans thing. Then they're prepared for it. And then they're not saying, gosh, Robert, you texted me five times last week. They say, well, I was expecting to hear from Robert three times. And then we had a schedule change and we had a rain out. So, yeah, it's normal. The worst thing that happens is if you're so worried about contact and communicating with parents that you don't, I'm a fan of over-communicating. If you don't communicate enough, you're gonna have that one parent that slips through the cracks and they're going to be extremely upset. They make that two-hour drive to find out the game had been canceled.
Mm-hmm.
And that's happened to me. You know, yeah. People looked at me because I was like, oops, because I was actually the team. I was the one in charge of communicating that, and somehow I didn't tell that one parent, and they drove 2 hours, and it's like, maybe I should have over-communicated. Maybe I should have done email and text just to make sure.
Yeah, just get a confirmation some way, somehow on that one. Yeah, that's a good point. So how often should a team admin communicate with other parents?
I would set that tone with the parents, but I think that you should just be constantly communicating the business at the very least. Letting them know uniform colors for Saturday's game. Remember, it's at 9:30 at such and such field. Be there by 9. Color will be yellow. Coach said yellow. And things like that. And then that way, they get used to it, you know? But I would check with the parents. A lot of parents are perfectly okay with the, you know, a little bit of over-communication. So I'm trying to think. Our team admins, probably at least two or three times a week, there was some kind of communication coming out in the really thick of the season, because they're trying to gather signatures on risk forms to turn in the tournaments that are coming up. They're trying to organize, you know, postseason party. They're trying to get an extra uniform for a guest player. There's always something popping up. So I would just warn your parents. You're going to hear from me two or three times a week and more than that. So what's the best form of communication? Text will be the primary form. How's that, parents? Or email's the primary form. I only text if it's inclement weather or something like that. And you set up those communication parameters, and then everybody's just sort of attuned to it and expecting it.
That's a good point. To ask them or get them to tell you what to expect. So give me a good volunteer story, like the story of a parent volunteer that went above and beyond, will always stick with you. And give me a story of a parent, obviously no names or no real names, a parent volunteer situation that was so bad and is such the wrong thing to do that it's stuck with you forever.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so the good is really good, because I can't think of a team where I didn't have a great parent volunteer. But there's one particular, I coached this team. Gosh, no, there's not one particular. I mean, that's the problem, is I'm sitting here and 5, 6, 7 teams are flooding into my mind of these parents who were just so heavily engaged and helpful. But one in particular, from the day I met her, she was my admin. We were forming a team, and somebody said, well, that's so-and-so's mom, and she'll be really engaged, and she'll be always wanting to talk with you. It was one of those where it was like, she will always be there. So make sure you engage with her, talk to her. She could be a real ally. And of course, some coaches go, yeah, here she comes again, type of thing. You know, she's always around. I did the opposite. You know, I went over and introduced myself. And she's like, how can I help? I could really use an admin. I'm your admin. And she turned to me and said, no politics. I don't give a darn for politics. I don't want to play these stupid politics. I just want to admin so that you can do your job, because my kid counts on you to do your job. Like, I like you.
Yeah, really.
And we became really close friends. And she was one of the ones, man, I had a binder with copies of everything. She had a binder with copies of everything. Her husband had a binder with copies of everything in case she wasn't at the game, because they had multiple kids. And she became my biggest ally. Now, that group of parents was phenomenal in general. I never had an issue. But she was always making sure that she would say things to the parents if I forgot something. Oh, you know what Reed forgot to tell you last night in the meeting was this. And he and I had been talking about it, so make sure you understand it. And she became a real advocate, and she everything just ran so smoothly. And she never expected any. It ended up her kid's top notch. Her kid's a phenomenal player. He's national team pool. He's futsal national team. He's been to Germany. So it was like, it just naturally worked out that I didn't have to worry about it. Because that's the other thing you'll see, Robert, and parents have seen it, is when you become the admin, other parents, sometimes there's that envy that creeps in, like green monster greed or whatever they call it, where they look at you and they're like, is his kid going to curry favor because he's the admin? And that's point. Always that concern. And luckily here, and that's honestly, I had somebody once give me advice. If you really want to get a good admin, find the best kid on your team and make that parent the admin, because then nobody will question your playing time decisions and stuff like that. I'm like, nah, let's not do that.
Okay? Yeah, really.
But her kid ended up being really good, so I didn't have to worry about those politics. But she just was so good at navigating the issues that were happening on the far sideline. She was so good at navigating just the logistics and everything. And we became really good friends. And we still, to this day, talk. We'll text back and forth every couple of days, a text will come, usually to fill me in on how our kids are doing, because I coached all three of them at one point. So that's probably one of my best. They just became really good. I ran camps one winter, and she did all the legwork to set them up and to get people there and collected all the money so I could get out on the field and run, or in the gym and run them and everything like that, and never asked for a thing in return. She's like, I just want to do this for you. She's like, I just want to see you succeed. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Because you get so jaded, you get so used to everybody having an angle, and she just never had an angle.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm trying to think. Glance over my shoulder here. My wife is in the background. A bad parent volunteer situation. I just don't think I've ever really had.
Friend of yours might have had a bad parent situation.
So, probably the only situation I can bring up, my wife's in the background saying it, because here it had nothing to do with me. It had nothing to do with any of my parents. So parents are off the hook. I love that. there was a team that did not have an admin, a parent volunteer. Nobody stepped up. And that's normal. That's okay. So I was running the club. So, of course, I turned to my awesome, amazing, I got to say this because I stuck her with this, wife, and said, I think I need you to admin this team.
Oh, boy.
She didn't even have a kid on the team. And so it became a real disaster of a season because we weren't at the practices ever. We weren't at the games. We weren't, because she was just adminning for them. And so you can imagine she's going and trying to take care of our two boys who are playing soccer, plus our daughter who's in activities, plus I'm out coaching or working with other teams or at tournaments watching teams play. And so it was like it just became a nightmare trying to get the cards to the coach and trying to get checks collected and logistics. And I think there were issues with getting signed up for tournaments and stuff. And because it was nobody's fault. It's just, she didn't have a kid on the team. Neither of us did. So we weren't there, and you have to be present to be a good admin. And so, she just said, she goes, that was kind of a nightmare season for everybody. I'm sure the parents thought it was a nightmare because, things probably didn't get done the way people wanted them to, but it was because nobody stepped up. So parents, if you're out there wondering, step up. Because that's what happens is you end up without an admin. You expect the coach to do it. And it's not going to be a good job. And trust me, it's not going to be a good job if I did it as an admin. Or the club assigns somebody who has no vested interest or no skin in the game. So that's probably the worst story.
That's a good point. It's probably as best to have a parent volunteer who actually has some sort of vested interest in making sure the team gets their stuff together. All right, I think I want to end on this question here, which is, let's talk about the nightmares. As a parent volunteer, my nightmares, and we've kind of touched on this, are, and you've touched on this as well, I don't turn in paperwork on time because there was a misunderstanding and my kid's team is out of the tournament. Or, I relay bad information to a parent about a game or a tournament or something or practice, and that kid suffers on the field with the coach because that parent didn't get the right information. Or I can tell that there's a negative vibe around the team, and I'm trying to improve it by liaisoning between the coach and the parents, and it's just a bad toxic atmosphere. What good advice or what calming advice can you give to the parent volunteers out there who are waking up in the middle of the night and going, I'm going to screw this up, and I'm going to ruin my kid's chance at a college scholarship / having fun ever in the sport?
Okay, so one, the chances of your kid getting a scholarship are already slim, so I wouldn't stress over that. And I'm not saying it's your kid, but it's the, the...
No, I know.
Rural you, the community you. The numbers are so... It's like don't stress over that because that's... As a parent volunteer, it's if your kid gets a scholarship, great, but they didn't play sports for that reason. The big one is the fun. We just want to make sure that whatever happens, we want to mitigate the destruction of fun, right? So no matter what happens as an admin, you got a toxic environment, make sure the kids don't get swept into it. You make a mistake, make sure the kids don't get swept into it. So my big one was always vulnerability. ask for help when you need it, and tell people, I need help. Be willing to be vulnerable. The New Zealand All Blacks, one of the toughest warrior cultures known to man, one of the humankind, and one of the greatest sports teams of all time, one of their big things is vulnerability. These guys, they are mountains. They are built like Everest. These guys are freaking monsters. They're huge. They're tough. They'll take a hit and keep going, and yet they're the first athlete you'll ever see that says, I need help, or I don't understand something, or I'm struggling here. So if they can do it, us normal humans can do it, right? As a mere mortals, we can do it. So first one is be vulnerable and just say, help, I need help, parents. I'm struggling here, or help, coach, or help, club. Two, own it. Own it. They're kids, okay? Nothing is so tragic that it's going to scar them for life. They didn't get into that tournament, fine. Immediately go to the coach, immediately go to the parents and say, I messed up. We didn't get in the tournament. It's all my fault, but I'm working with the coach and club to get something else. Because what will happen is coach or club will have contacts, because we did it all the time. When it happened that one season with the one team my wife was working with, we just reached out to people we knew. I reached out to DOCs at other clubs and executive. Hey, Kevin, you got a tournament coming up? Can we get our team in your tournament? Can we slip in? And you wouldn't believe the humanity that comes out of that when people realize these 10, 8-year-old girls are going to suffer because of a mistake an adult made that didn't mean to do it. People will say, no, we got a space for them in the tournament. We can take care of this. Or administrators at tournaments who were going to forfeit your team or something. We get it. People make mistakes. So the humanity comes out when you just own it and say, this is what happened. I'm sorry. The worst that you can do is point fingers. It wasn't my fault. It was coach's fault because he didn't communicate to me in time. Because then it just creates this toxicity, this negativity.
Mm-hmm.
The toxic environment, that's a tough one because you are part of the culture. But you're also, because you're this parent admin, you're also called to almost be this outside of the culture looking in kind of person. So you got a foot in each world and it's tough. The big one there is to return everybody to why we're doing this. What happens with us adults is we get into these toxic situations and the arguments become adult arguments. They stop forgetting it's about the kids and they start pointing fingers at each other and they start calling names at each other and they start blaming each other. And I've seen it so many times where the kids aren't even mentioned anymore. It has nothing to do with the children. It has to do with us adults. And so if somebody could be that calming person that says, hey, we're all upset. I'm upset. I made a mistake. I get where you're coming from. Let's all take a step back because what matters most is our kids. So let's as a group try to figure out how can we make a decision here that impacts our kids most positively and reduces any kind of negative effect on them. And a lot of times that's enough to snap parents out of it and go, you're right. I mean, I've sent nasty emails before where I've said, enough. You're done talking because you're a bunch of adults and you haven't even mentioned the child's name. Stop acting like this. It's about the kids. Now, who's ready to grow up with me because I've made the mistake too and make this about the children? Now, they don't like that, but,
I can imagine. So,
and then the other one is, and I did this as a coach too, you can acknowledge other people's feelings and you can sympathize with other people's feelings without validating those feelings. And what I mean by that is, I'm not saying that you should invalidate people, is if a parent comes up to you and they're very, very, very upset and they're like, coach is this and coach is that, if you turn and go, yeah, I know, you've just validated everything they just said, and they're going to chomp down on that and not let it go. And what I found as a club leader was a lot of times I had a club where they would shove me in front of these upset parents and be like, whoa, you've got tact, Reed. You go deal with them. Too much of a coward to do it yourself. So I'll go talk to them. Sorry, but that's how I always felt. I'm like, all right, I'll talk to them. But what I found was, and I had great mentors who taught me this, is I would go to that parent and I would say, let me hear it. And I would talk to the parent and I would listen. I go, understand where you're coming from. Totally see your perspective. Yes, yes, yes. I see where you, I completely understand how you feel. And I know this is difficult on you. And then they'd get done and they'd scream at me and they'd maybe even call me names, even though I had nothing to do with it. I was just the person that got, to do the conflict resolution. And then they'd go, I'd say, what can we do to move forward? I'm good. I feel better now. You know what? I've talked it out. I'm good. Give me a day and I'll think about it. A lot of times they just want to be heard, because what do we always do as clubs is we shove them away. We say, just write your damn check and leave me alone.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want that. They want to be heard and understood. Like I said, just don't validate it, because the moment you say, yeah, I know, coach can be a real jerk, you've set the wheels in motion. The cancer is spread. Oh, I don't know if that helps. What I would say is just remember they're kids, and all they care about is having fun. It's us adults that want more than having fun. And I don't care. You can call me names on social media if you want for saying that, but it's darn true. Look at even the pros. Look at Steph Curry. All he does is smile. Lionel Messi, all he does is smile. I mean, come on. They just want to have fun at all ages and all levels. It's us adults who make it way more than that. So just sleep at night knowing that you're doing something with your kid and you're creating memories. Because if you're too stressed out over this stuff, you're missing out on the bigger picture, which is 20 years from now, your kid has this memory of the time they spent with you and their friends on a field doing something fun. So the other thing is, my wife always says to my kids, she'll say this, they come home and say, Joey did this to me or whatever. And she says it when she works with her customers in the insurance industry. Nobody wakes up in the morning and as a customer or as a parent says, you know what? I'm just going to make Robert's day miserable. I'm just going to be a total jerk today. People don't wake up feeling that way. Something caused them to feel that way. And behaviors come from underlying feelings. So if we can connect with people, we can figure out what the underlying feelings are. That'll help a lot. And don't be afraid, Robert, and other admins, to say back to parents or coaches. Just like you didn't wake up deciding you were going to ruin my day by screaming at me. I did not wake up today to screw you, Robert. That was not my goal. I didn't wake up and say, you know what? I'm going to screw Robert today. I'm going to make sure the team doesn't get into the tournament by not turning in that form. No. We all make mistakes, okay? So let's just get past this mistake.
Can't add anything to that. I think that's the perfect way to sum that up right there. So hopefully nobody thinks that wakes up thinking that they want to make someone's life miserable on a certain day, but certainly not in our clubs. So
I have yet to meet a person that really does want to do that. So
I think you're right. There usually is something that provokes it. So I was trying to think of some examples where I headed out for a company or something, but no, there is that spark that does it. So, but
it's
say.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
I'll interrupt real quickly.
No, of course.
It's interesting. So in positive discipline, we talk about you have to connect with the kid before you can correct the child. So the thing is like kids misbehave. We get that. That doesn't make them bad kids. There's something driving that behavior, right? The environment, mm-hmm. Something at home, something that happened, you know, the kid next to him is poking him with a pencil, something. And so a good teacher will connect with that child first and understand and create a relationship, a connection with that child, and then figure out what the underlying feelings are that's driving that behavior before they just snap at that kid. Same thing for us adults. When an adult is acting out, quote unquote, there's something driving that behavior. So that instead of attacking the behavior, find out from that parent, hey, you know, what's going on? You know, how can I help you? Whatever it is to get them to slow down, take a breath, and reveal to you what it is that upset them so badly. I'm actually really PO'd because work's not going well and da da da, and I didn't mean I took it down on
mm-hmm.
And it, when people know that you legitimately care about their feelings and what's happening in their lives, some of that anger will subside, because like you and I just said, people don't wake up to be angry. Something caused them to be angry.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Great point. Well, if someone has a reason to be angry and they want to reach out to you, but probably more likely they want to reach out to you and say some positive things and learn some positive things, what's the best way for them to reach you?
I would say Twitter is @coach_Reed, and of course Reed is two E's, R-E-E-D. Facebook, you can find me. I'm on the Changing the Game Facebook page mm-hmm. all the time. I have my own for my book that'll be coming out, which is about communication, believe it or not. and that's the Coach Reed on Facebook. It's because Coach Reed was taken. Instagram is also coach_Reed. Pretty easy to find. And I'm pretty conversive. I will carry random conversations with random people. I don't block anybody. I've yet to have to block anybody. I don't know. People won't always agree with me. And if you say something to me, if you disagree with something I said, like my wife disagrees with the whole lollipop parent thing. She thinks it's shaming, you know, and she's right. Mm-hmm. It is. So if you disagree with something and you write me in Twitter and something, I don't have a problem with you disagreeing with what I say. It's, you know, we all have our ways of doing it. And if you have a better way, I'm happy to hear it, because I think that we can all keep learning. Even I'm not even coaching anymore, and I hope I'm learning.
I think that's a positive social media attitude to have right there. Unfortunately, lacking in today's day and age. So, well, if you want to reach out to me, I'm very easy. Twitter @RobertHayJR. I'm also on Facebook. You can find me there. And every once in a while, I delve into the Instagram, just to make sure I'm cool and keeping up with the other kids. So, thank you to Soccer Nation for the podcast and for hosting us. And again, for helping us put out a great show. Check them out. Check out their great content as always and their other podcasts, which are very excellent. So without anything else, thank Coach Reed for the show today.
Robert, thank you. Another great show. So next show, you have to talk more than me because I did a lot of talking this time.
Well, yeah, we'll have to find a topic that I know more than you about. So good luck with that. So
there's a lot of things. Trust me.
Not in this area, but we'll come at you with another good episode next time. So until next time,
just remember, shot happens, but it's okay. We don't have to react to it.